Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
One of the absolute best in all the land, Jay Billis, joins us from ESPN here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky to talk about draft picks, to talk about prospects, and I'm sure we'll circle around back to not just the basketball court, but Supreme Court before it's all said and done here. Jay, thank you for joining us as always. Appreciate your time. I know how busy you are this when ping pong balls are bouncing.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us again. So the Warriors are looking at the 7th and the 14 picks, and I just want to start with number 7 because we've kind of agreed on two names that could be there, Scotty Barnes and Davion Mitchell, the point guard from Baylor. Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of both players, please?
Well, Scotty Barnes is the bigger of the two. He's a really big, skilled, I would say, guard, small forward. He doesn't shoot it, but he does everything else. Can really defend. He came off the bench for Florida State. Was arguably their best player, but the idea that he would come off the bench, he's a selfless player, but really good defensively, good in transition, can handle it, passes very well. Not a great rebounder, but does rebound his position. I think the next step for him is going to become being a more reliable shooter. But I'm a fan of his. I like him very much as a player, and a really good young man too. That, you know, it's not all about him. I like him a lot, and I think he's going to go in the top, you know, 7 or 8, I would say. And then Davion Mitchell, you asked about. I've got him ranked a little bit higher than you do. Not that matters, but he's really talented and transferred to Baylor, and you know, it's probably a 30% three-point shooter coming into last year, and last year he shot 45%. He's the best individual defender in the draft. Just a bulldog of a defender, can really affect the game that way, and then super explosive with the ball and super explosive in burst to get past defenders and get to the basket, and then very good in isolation, creating his own. He averaged close to 6 assists last year, if I remember right. But he went from 9 to probably 14, 15 points a game. And I thought second half of the season was near unstoppable. He was fantastic.
Is there a player whose stock dramatically rose as a direct result of the order in which the teams were named?
Not that I'm aware of, Ray. I don't think so. You might have had one team. I don't even know who it would be. But, you know, maybe there's one team that has a glut of guards, and they'll say, okay, well, we don't need another guard, so let's take Evan Mobley or something like that. But, you know, I tend to think that for the most part, unless you really like somebody that nobody else does, and that happens from time to time, but for the most part, you're going to take the best available player where you are, because things change so fast. And, you know, I don't want to say like there aren't situations like years ago, maybe it was 05 or something, when Minnesota had a bunch of picks and they took 2 point guards in a row, neither one of which could play very well. But those are just draft mistakes that happen every year.
So this isn't going to affect the Warriors, but the clear consensus number one overall, Cade Cunningham. Why? I assume you agree with that. If you don't, certainly let us know. But why is he a cut above the rest?
Well, he has size. He's 6'8". He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's ridiculously skilled, so he can handle the ball as a point guard. He's an excellent passer. 40% three-point shooter that gets his own. Like, he can operate in isolation. He can post, mid-post, you name it. And he's a good defender, and he rebounds his position really well. He's got everything. And, you know, Detroit's going to take him. And I was asked earlier today, you know, if he reminds you of Grant Hill. And I was like, well, in certain aspects, but I think Grant Hill's a lot better, or was a lot better than Cade Cunningham, which shows you, you know, how good Grant Hill was. But he's not as explosive an athlete as Grant Hill was, but he's a better shooter. Coming out of college, Grant didn't shoot the ball as well as he does.
Jay Billis here on 95.7 The Game. I'd like to talk about when players who are consensus top 10 high school guys step into a year of college, and then for whatever, the fit wasn't there, the season that they had hoped for didn't materialize. I'm talking a little bit about Zaire Williams out of Stanford, who at 6'8 was as juicy a prospect as you could find, maybe the highest level recruit ever to Stanford. And it didn't really work out, but I think there's a good player there. And what can you tell us about guys and funny fits and what the NBA starts to look at when they see talent, but not a lot of on-court fit?
Yeah, I don't know that the NBA and evaluators would be all that worried about Zaire Williams not having the kind of year they expected, because it's really about what tools he has and what he can do in the future. Now, if he showed that he really can't play, that'd be different, but he didn't. That wasn't the issue. Williams can make shots, and he's got size. But he's only 19 years old. So a lot of these guys, not a lot of them, most of them have a ton of growth that they're going to experience. So they're going to get better and better. The question is, how high is their ceiling? And so if you can determine two things with a player, you know, what's their floor? If, you know, there are some guys you don't know where their floor is. Heck, Ben Simmons, he gets worse. He's an all-star, and he seems to be worse. But some guys have really high ceilings, like they can get a ton better. And that's what you're really looking for, guys that are really good, that you know are going to be good, but that can also blossom and turn into great. And we've certainly seen that. I mean, you know, I don't know how many people thought that Kawhi Leonard was going to be all this. You know, clearly 14 teams didn't think he would, or they would have taken him before Toronto did at 15. You know, stuff like that. And you guys are, you know, in the shadow of Golden State, where they built a championship team with a 7 pick, an 11 pick, and I think 35 pick, right? Wasn't Draymond Green 35?
Right around there.
Yeah, something like that. So you don't have to have the first pick build the champion. You know, you just have to use the picks you have intelligently, and maybe get a little lucky here and there. That doesn't hurt either.
How deep does this draft go before the first team reaches? I mean, if you know what I mean, how many guys could you project as guys who will be significant contributors in the NBA before you start getting the guy who ends up getting stashed in Europe or finds himself, you know, not finding a niche somewhere? How deep are we talking here?
Well, we've got really good prospects that go into the second round here. There are a bunch of guys that in the second round that could very well have been first round picks. I mean, this is one of the deeper drafts I can recall. You know, usually drafts are judged upon how many all-stars and Hall of Famers they put out. And, you know, so the gold standard probably in the time I've been doing this was my first year doing the draft, which was 2003, when LeBron and Carmelo and Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh all came out in the same class. So, you know, the top of the class often determines how good we think it is. But if you're looking at how many, you know, solid, good, long-term NBA players come out of a draft, this looks like it's going to be awfully good. But you know, we're not going to really know for a period of years how it pans out. But my sense is we're gonna get a lot of players out of this draft that turn out to be really, really good, and really into the second round, we're going to see a number of players that I think are going to stick in the league and maybe have really good careers for a long time. But I don't know that. I think you used the term reach. I don't know, like. But to me, I look at the draft by saying, okay, if you've got the 15th pick, you know, you can't you can't be looking at that going, all right, how do we hit a home run with this pick? You know, you want to get the best value you can for the pick. And sometimes that's going to be getting somebody that's really solid, that's going to be a rotation player for a long time, or maybe even a starter. Or maybe, you know, I don't know if this counts as a reach. Maybe you take a really, you know, a younger player that hasn't blossomed yet, but has the opportunity to really blossom. But you're taking a chance. You're taking a little bit of a risk. So, yeah, I don't know what, you know, how I'm processing the word reach there, but I still think the lottery's really strong, and heck, you can get some good players here late into the first round that could wind up being terrific.
You've led me perfectly into what I wanted to ask you, Jay, which is, you know, that 14th pick that the Warriors have. Like you said, there's an argument to go high upside. There's an argument to go really solid. And there's sort of two guys in that mold that I think are particularly interesting. Moses Moody, the young kid who seems to have a pretty high upside. And then Jared Butler out of Baylor, who, look, let's put the medical thing aside for a moment and assume that he's medically cleared. I've seen him everywhere from like 14 to 27 on draft boards. So what do you think of those two prospects as sort of the two sides of that development versus really solid coin?
Butler is the guy, you know who he is and you know what you're going to get, and he's certainly going to get better. I'm not suggesting. I don't know when it happened where a guy that's 21 or 22 years old is considered an old man that can't get any better. Remember when everybody was a senior that came out in the draft and we talked about them being rookies and they have a lot to learn? You know, now they're looked at as these gray beards that, well, you know, we know who he is. What about the young guy? But Moses Moody is the young guy, and he's a very talented scorer and a really good defender as well. So I don't know if he's even 19 years old yet, honestly. I think he'll have to be 19 by the draft. That's another month, but he's pretty young, but very talented. And Butler's he's older, stronger, but very efficient, and an excellent catch and shoot player, can shoot off the dribble, gets fouled, good in transition, and a very good defender. So you can plug him in, and he's going to be right now.
Your phone is breaking up just a little bit, but let me try and get a couple more questions in. One last prospect question. Corey Kispert has an NBA shot, but I don't know if he's an NBA player. Do you think he is?
Yes, he's a lottery pick. He's absolutely an NBA player. If he's not, then they'll guys in this draft.
I tell you, we got about half of that, Jay. We're going to call Jay right back to see if we can get a few. There you go. I mean, by the way, no hesitation on Kispert.
No, I don't think there's a question over whether he's an NBA player. I think there's a question over whether he has a high enough NBA ceiling to be a top 10 pick.
Yeah, I've also heard that he has like a trick shoulder.
Well, I mean, if that's the issue, then that could happen to anybody, right? But like, look, Joe Harris, right? We just saw a lot of the problems with Joe Harris. He's clearly an NBA player. We're not arguing about whether he's an NBA player. We're arguing about, would you want to spend a top 10 pick on that guy, or a top 14 pick, as it were?
I think the question is whether he's a starter or not.
Yeah. Well, we do have Jay back, and hopefully on a better line. Jay, thank you very much for getting back to us. We do appreciate it. What were your thoughts on Kispert again? You broke up there.
I mean, you asked if he's an NBA player. I mean, it's not close. He's a lottery pick, so he's absolutely an NBA player, and I'm not sure there are 10 better players in the draft than Kispert. He's absolutely an NBA player.
All right, so if the Warriors, if he falls to 14, sounds like that's a pretty decent endorsement then. We have you for just a minute or two more, Jay, and we got to get off the court and into the Supreme Court. You have been further down the road of NCAA criticism than most have ever been. What did you think of what we got from the Supreme Court this past week?
A colossal loss by the NCAA at the United States Supreme Court. And it's the second time that the highest court in our land has called the NCAA an antitrust violator. And that violator, but a serial antitrust law violator. And, you know, the first time was when the court did it in 1984 when the school sued the NCAA because the NCAA wouldn't let them make as much money as they wanted off football games on the way they restrict players. And the court basically invited invited lawsuits against the NCAA to tear down the rest of the amateurism model. Especially Justice Kavanaugh, that said in any other business, the NCAA's policies would be illegal. So I thought it was a stunning rebuke of the NCAA and their amateurism policies. And what I found really interesting was how incompetent the NCAA leadership was in petitioning the Supreme Court to hear the case. Like, this wasn't the players that appealed this to the United States Supreme Court. It was the NCAA, and they put their whole sort of model at risk. Now, I've been saying for a long time that, you know, the NCAA's amateurism policies against athletes violate federal antitrust law, but they've received such deference and protection from the courts. You know, you thought it was going to continue to go on, and they just pitched all that away by taking this to the Supreme Court, and they lost. And lost badly. I mean, 9-0 in today's divisive times, you know, is a stunning. That's a stunning loss. And there are only two people to blame for this, and that's Mark Emmert and Donald Remy. Now, there are a lot of people to blame for these, you know, illegal policies that the NCAA has been putting forth for all these years, but for putting those policies at risk when they weren't at risk, all the NCAA had to do was accept the Ninth Circuit ruling and move on. But they wouldn't do it. And look where they are now. And we haven't seen the last of this. They're going to lose on NIL. They'll most likely lose on other player compensation. I can't believe they did that. And what a colossal, not only failure, but failure in leadership.
Given the fact that the NCAA, even 37 years later, is still sort of trying to get away with what they've gotten away with, I guess I want to ask, how much wiggle room do they still have? Or are they finally trapped in a way that they can't get out of?
Yeah, they're trapped now. You know, they've the court called them out on stuff we've been talking about for a long time, which is, you know, amateurism didn't even have a definition. They change it, you know, essentially from year to year, and amateurism basically means whatever they say it means at a given time, and that certainly hurt them in court and at the trial and on appeal. And then, you know, giving up these protections by putting them at risk, that was a huge, huge loss for the NCAA. So the next legal challenge that they have, whether say it's on NIL, there are a couple lawsuits in the queue right now just on NIL. They're not going to have the protection of that dicta from the 1984 Board of Regents case that said that, you know, that basically said that amateurism is what, you know, sets apart college sports and you know, makes it different from pro sports and makes it you know, bulletproof. That's gone. The Supreme Court said that never meant anything and never should have been used. Essentially, they said that. And then they're going to have to go by the rule of reason test, where they're going to have to prove that their policies are pro-competitive and not anti-competitive. And Justice Kavanaugh, in his concurrence, showed a lot of disdain for the NCAA in saying that he doesn't think they're going to be able to do it, that their policies would be illegal in any other business. So it's open season now. What you're going to see is the NCAA will not pass any NIL legislation as they said they would, because now they're going to be afraid that it's going to be, again, violative of antitrust law. And they're going to go back to Congress on both knees now and beg Congress to bail them out. So you'll have a serial antitrust violator saying, please, please give us an antitrust exemption so we can go on violating federal antitrust law with your blessing. And that doesn't sound like a very good argument to me to get Congress to act. But the only hope that they have is they can keep selling this nonsense that we can't have fair competition if there are different state laws. that was totally bogus. It would be the equivalent of, you know, you haven't seen the NCAA rush to Congress saying, hey, this is totally unfair and wrong, and we can't run a business this way if there are differing state income tax laws. Like, all the best coaches are going to go to Florida, Texas, and Nevada because there's no state income tax there. And that's a huge advantage, and it's not fair. And Congress, you need to help us. They're not saying that because it's stupid. It may be a factor, but it's not going to make Nick Saban run to the University of Florida instead of Alabama. And similarly, money may be a factor for a player in the decision they make, but it's not going to be the only factor. And so, of course, they can run a business like that, and they don't need, you know, how many businesses get, you know, one standard from Congress for all 50 states? You know, it's just another snow job, and I hope Congress doesn't fall for it.
Whenever we want to talk sports and law, you are the perfect person to call. Jay Billis, thank you so very much for your time.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Always our pleasure, indeed. Hey, let's give you a chance to win $1,000. Text the code word GREAT to 72881, as in that interview with Jay Billis was great. 72881, brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Toyota, let's go places. This is a multi-state contest. Message and data rates apply. Yes, Ray.
I was just going to say, I think he's understating the argument in that I really do believe Nick Saban's going to end up at Nevada, Reno in a couple of years.
888-957-95. Some of these have got to start landing, Ray.
That one made perfect sense. You got to catch up.
It was good.
I think the fact that he characterized them as finally cornered. I think the one thing that he said right at the end still gives them some wiggle room. If they're willing to buy off enough senators, they could get that exemption that they're looking for. That's their way out. Do they have much of a chance of getting it? Probably not, but there still is a strategy, and that would be it, which is out-and-out corruption.
No, Davion Mitchell guy, though, huh?
The thing about the NCAA is we all know it stinks. We all know there's more of this coming, and hopefully within a few years it's dead. But I don't know that there's much more to say about it, really.
No, well, but there is, because something happened that was fairly significant, and to find out how they're going to try to get out of it, which I think is still going to be their strategy, is worth pursuing, because these guys have been hard to kill. I mean, Billis himself said the last time they took a beating like this in the court was 1984.
When's the last time a suit like this was brought against them? 1984.
Okay, but my point is, it's 37 years later, and they're still doing the same crap.
Well,
yeah,
it's
but it's lack of action by...
But it's 37 years later with a sweeping change in the public conversation. 37 years ago, those kids don't deserve to be paid a penny. And that's how it sounded in every bar, not just conservative bars. That's how it sounded everywhere. If you're going to college, screw you. Your scholarship is your payment. Be happy that you're lucky enough to be in that situation. And that was that. The pendulum has so swung the way of college. The thing that's interesting is, even if we all agree that the NCAA needs to be dynamited, which it does, there then needs to be a governing body that then comes in and is, you know, somebody's got to run college football. Somebody's got to run college basketball in the tournament. How do you replace a corrupt governing body with a just governing body? And that is going to be a hard question to answer.
And I think the answer to that in the short term is there's going to be 11 corrupt bodies called conferences that will do it.
Oh, and they will. The power struggle will be Shakespearean. It'll be like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think it. I mean, this looks like the end game, but I'm not convinced, because if we know anything about college administrators, it's that they will figure out a way, even out of a bear trap, and are willing to chew off their own legs to get out of them.
Let's go to Nico in Oakland to get the conversation back to prospects, draft picks. Hello, Nico. Thank you very much for holding.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I was just curious to know, would the possibility of keeping those picks and possibly getting some vets that are free agents, like Marcus Hall from L.A., Patty Mills, just getting those two vets possibly and dumping off Oubre, along with, I don't know, Pascal, maybe a couple other guards that really aren't effective on the Warriors. Would that look good? I mean, it just seems like the money matches right, the experience would get there, but they get those picks, like get what's his name, Butler or Mitchell from Baylor, and then get Wagner from Michigan. I think that's right. That just seems like, I just want to know, would that be possible?
Yeah, I think that's likely. I mean, I think the scenario Nico's describing, unless I'm misunderstanding, that veterans come via the mid-level exception and veteran minimums, guys like, I don't know if Marc Gasol is going to be the one, but yeah, guys in the category that Marc Gasol was in last year.
Hey, that's a big plan of it. That's the way last year was supposed to go.
And then Clay
was going to go that way. And then ring chasers saw an ACL snap and said, I'm going to go chase somewhere else.
That's right.
That's what happened. And I think it is going to happen again.
Here are some names just for funsies that Lucas came up with.
Okay, first of all, that's my work, but go ahead.
This is?
Yes.
I think. All right. Rashawn Holmes, Kelly Olynyk, Robin Lopez, Jermichael Green, JaVale coming back, Mike Scott. And again, I'm cherry picking from this list. Reggie Jackson is a free agent, probably earned too much money. Josh Richardson, Lou Williams.
I'll tell you, Lou Williams, if he goes on to win an NBA title, he's going to be out of your price range.
Maybe not at 38 years old, right?
Lou Williams next year would be a great Golden State Warrior. Are you kidding me?
How about Jeff Green?
Sure.
Right? Nick Batum? Kind of interesting. Bring some skills to the table, bring some veteran presence, some playoff experience.
Hey, PJ Tucker.
No. He's on the list, but that's a no from me. Wesley Matthews.
PJ Tucker's the kind of bad man that you need.
Nah.
Okay, then.
He's already... I mean, watching him with Milwaukee, he's already too far past it. He's not... Like, he wasn't even hitting corner threes at a good rate.
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of defense, and not afraid of Kevin Durant still speaks to me just a little bit. Didn't exactly slow him down.
Yeah, exactly.
But... I'm not afraid of Kevin Durant speaks to me. I think that, you know, if you're looking for a veteran and a little attitude and a modern David West, you got a little bit there in PJ Tucker, who, again, is, what, 8 games away from winning a ring this year? Not bad, PJ. 888-957-9570 is the number. When we come on back, much more still coming up today here on 95.7 The Game.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We're brought to you by the Department of Healthcare Services. Welcome back. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. You know, we just took a call after a great conversation with
Jay Billis.
Thank you very much. I was blanking. I had the name Nico in my mind because that's who we took a call from.
Was that Nico Mannion, by the way?
That was not Nico Mannion.
Okay.
That was definitely
root beer float, baby.
That was definitely not Nico. I'm glad that the root beer float caught on, though. At least with you.
Your nicknames, which hit my ear like garbage water at first, really grow on me.
Fungus, baby.
Yeah, root beer float just wormed its way into my brain.
I'm going to tell you right now that this is like the one discernible skill I've had in my life. I would come up with the nickname that followed the person through their life. in high school, in college, post-college, it keeps on happening.
So Grandy's screwed.
Maldonado's in trouble.
It's just, look at it this way. The streak is either going to live or die with Grandy Maldonado. We'll find out, I guess, as we continue to see if you got the job here. You got the job here. So we'll find out. Look, we have an awful lot of stuff to still get into. But like I was saying, the reason why I was blanking on Jay Billis is because I wanted to get back to the point, the question that Nico asked. Do you think guys are going to be willing to sign on for less than dollars to join a plus situation that the Warriors hope to turn around and offer everyone to compete for a title next year? Well, that's the plan. That was the plan last year. That we know why the plan got scuttled, at least in the minds of interested free agents. And, you know, the Warriors this year are really in position to put themselves back into that conversation for the year afterwards, too, with a level of success. So you could have two waves of bargain free agents coming your way. And the other thing that the Warriors got going for them is a stellar reputation in this league. People know Warrior players are treated right. They're respected. Their needs are served by the team. Their voices are heard. Their personal interests are encouraged. The Warriors really do have this stellar reputation in the way that it is operated from top to bottom, which brings me to another little story that I wanted to bring up with you two guys. Did you hear about Blake Griffin in a conversation that he had with the Boston Celtics, who I guess the Boston Celtic player is going to remain nameless? But as Blake was, you know, enjoying his bought-out week from Detroit and kind of turning his attention to where he was going to play, he even told that the Golden State Warriors were on his radar. He thought about coming to the Warriors. He thought about a couple of other teams, and one of the teams that he took a real long and hard look at was the Boston Celtics, until a Boston Celtics player called him and basically said, "Dude, you do not want to come here. It is an internal mess. There is nothing but bad feelings and hard feelings all over the locker room. It is not good." The Celtics targeted Blake Griffin to bolster their front court this season, but the all-star forward was told to stay away, apparently, by a Celtics player who he asked should he join the team midseason, and the Celtics player said, "Let me tell you in some terms here. Let me tell you, I really like some teams. I like Boston. I like Golden State. I really like Portland. There were a few teams out there. I'm losing where they..." Anyways, the Celtics ended up signing Jabari Parker and got nothing.
I wish the story had more of what this guy was trying to describe. Is it player against player? Is it player against coach? Is it player against front office?
I think it could be
coach versus front office. Yeah. I mean, It could be any or all. You're right.
The way that it blew up, it could be all of it.
But I mean, it suggests that Danny Ainge did not retire. It suggests I would have to think that, you know,
it's called an invitation to retire.
Yeah, I think they walked him to the door because they immediately had a successor and it was in house. It wasn't like they, you know, "Oh my God, Danny, you're retiring. We're not ready for this." I think this has been, if you put these things together, and it certainly sounds like Ainge got told, this isn't working anymore. Now, the question is whether what the player was referring to also included the head coach, because all of a sudden you've got the same dynamic only with different faces.
Well, but if your argument is that this makes you think Danny Ainge was forced out, then wouldn't it also have to make you think Brad Stevens wasn't part of the problem? Because if they were forcing out the problems and Brad Stevens was part of the problem, why would he get a promotion?
Well, because not every time management does the logical thing.
But then how can you use it to assume that Danny Ainge was fired?
I can use it for any reason I want, first of all.
Okay.
And secondly, it's certainly possible that somebody lost a power struggle between somebody else who was a combatant. I mean,
sure.
That's what I'm saying.
Stevens won a power struggle with Danny Ainge, essentially?
I'm saying that's possible. I'm not in Boston. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm saying that what the player told Blake Griffin could have any number of meanings.
Yeah.
And the target could be, you know, the targets could be multivaried, or it could be just one, and they think they fixed it. But it certainly sounds like the Celtics are, you know, still in more disarray than less.
Well, yeah, I think that was on everyone's TV screens for 72 games this year. You know, I mean, that's the thing about this, is that looked like a dysfunctional basketball team in a lot of ways. And I do think one of the obvious ways was the Kemba Walker fit never worked, and they've obviously dealt with that already. So I think we can assume that definitely had something to do with it. And look, Ray's presumption that Danny Ainge might have had something to do with it is a pretty good one, too. All that being said, I think your initial point, Damon, which is that even after two generally down years, no one would be saying that about the Warriors organization. I do think that matters.
It certainly matters. Players talk to each other, period. You know, if you think agents sway player decisions, and dollars obviously sway player decisions, player chit-chat goes on awfully long. Think of the people that you talk to when you are moving from job to job, and what the people whose advice you seek out. You know, you're not always talking to the other teams. You talk to the other company's employees if you can.
By the way, when the other company's number one best employee is a super welcoming, friendly guy, that helps too.
100%. So to just kind of fine point it back to Boston, which was a mess, an underreported upon dumpster fire that didn't add together. It looks like they might get a little stabilizing, because it looks like they're getting closer and closer to naming Brooklyn Nets assistant Ime Udoka their next head coach, which then opens up that assistant spot, for Collins to take after leaving the Warriors, because we really think that he might end up joining Steve Kerr's...
Nash, yeah.
Steve Nash next year in Brooklyn. So
I think it's actually Jacques Vaughn who has the number one assistant seat, but he's expected to be gone as well. Nash may sort of have to rebuild that thing after 1 year. Udoka, though, is yet another pop guy.
Yep.
And we're getting to a point where practically half the league has some version of a Popovich disciple coaching their basketball team. You know, I mean, you could count Steve Kerr in that, right? There's a lot of guys out there.
And there might be one gal.
And potentially soon to be one gal who are Popovich tree coaches. And look, I don't know if that's such a bad thing. It seems to work in a lot of places.
But when you think about it, there haven't been coaches in one place long enough to have a tree.
Right.
So if you're talking about NBA trees, you know, the list ends pretty quickly.
Well,
I mean, there's not a Rick Carlisle tree. There's not an Eric Spoelstra tree, or even a Pat Riley tree.
Well, there certainly could be, though, if those guys were getting hired.
But right? My point is, usually you got to be around for a long time to get a tree going.
But Carlisle and Spoelstra have been around a long time. Okay. And they still don't have the trees, right?
Well, I think it matters that you're in one place for a long time. Just the fact that you're coaching for a long time is not the same thing. And frankly, Steve Kerr is at a point where he might start making a tree.
Well, I mean, I think it's a bit much to say that Nate McMillan is a part of his tree.
No, not Nate McMillan. You're thinking of Alvin Gentry.
Or Alvin Gentry, excuse me.
Like, yeah, no, I wouldn't Alvin count Gentry him wouldn't as that. I wouldn't count Mike Brown
Alvin
as
Gentry
that.
Is the D'Antoni tree.
Right, and Luke Walton is not exactly been a branch that has flourished.
Right, he would have been the first Kerr tree coach. And all I'm saying is,
we always talk copycat league, right? Like the thing people are copycatting at head coach is somebody who worked under Greg Popovich. And, you know, a lot of sort of no-name assistants, maybe a lot is strong, but look at like Taylor Jenkins is a Pop guy, right? I mean, who left with Budenholzer, I believe.
Yeah.
Budenholzer is a Pop guy. And we could just go down, and I'm not saying they're all the best coaches in the league, but it's a tree that's had more success than most trees, I guess is what I'm saying.
It's learning how to coach.
Yeah.
From one of the best to do it with a steady franchise.
It doesn't make sense.
Doesn't, you know, you don't sit around panicking when something goes wrong. I mean, the Spurs are just steady Eddie, and that is what Popovich has done. A lot of his disciples, Budenholzer is about to, you know, start coaching the biggest series of his entire life tonight.
Yep.
We got to take a real quick break, and when we come on back, whatever you're thinking about, Ray, we're going to start with that. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
We've been talking an awful lot about number 7. We've been talking an awful lot about number 14. Little What If Wednesday here on 95.7 The Game. We will be going over the questions that only the three of us are brave enough to ponder. We'll do
what
that.
If I told you?
Exactly. A little bit later on today, we are going to have that coming up for you. Maybe a little Steve Kerr slipping on in. We've been told that there is a possibility that that happens today, tomorrow, maybe the day, next day. It'd be great to talk with Steve, what he thinks about what 7 and 14 mean for his team. Obviously, the Pistons, Rockets, Cavs, and Raptors have the top four picks, followed by the Magic, Thunder, and then the Warriors. The Warriors and Magic are the two teams with two lottery picks this year. We got a total of 5 teams, though, Oklahoma City, Houston, Golden State, Orlando, and New York, who have control over 12 of the 30 first-round picks. That feels extreme, does it not? That's nuts. It's very few teams holding so many cards in their hands.
I'm relatively convinced, though, that some of those 12 picks, based on who's taking them, will be busts by definition. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Orlando screws up 5 and 8, because that's what Orlando does.
They're the people who said, let's fix Markelle Fultz. So, yeah.
Well, they've got a pretty good price.
They got
price
a great
on
deal on him at that point. Yeah. But, yeah, who knows what they end up doing. I'm not just going to say because that's your uniform, you're going to screw it up or anything like that. But look at a team like
the way to bet.
It is the way to bet.
I don't know. Jonathan Isaac was a pretty good draft pick. Cole Anthony looked decent this year. They're not all bad. They've also had some big mistakes.
Yeah, every single team out there should have one or two things they could point at and say, well, that's not an embarrassment.
Yeah,
but,
exactly. You never know. That's the excitement of the draft.
The Pistons' future is now, baby. I mean, you don't say that out loud more than twice in a lifetime. You really don't. Think about it. They got 3 first-round picks last year. They get out of the Blake Griffin deal, and now they got the number 1 overall pick. This is going to be their first top 5 pick since they took Darko.
Oh, boy.
Darko Milicic, number 2 overall. You don't talk about bus at number 2. How about Darko, baby? You could have had LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony. LeBron was kind of off the board there, so the draft started at 2, and the Pistons went with Darko and basically weren't heard of, but for their one title year that they managed to squeeze out, and it had nothing to do with him.
The next 3 picks would be Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and Carmelo Anthony. That's a tough one, man.
That ain't good.
That is a tough one. Like, when you have a bad pick, you always want to look at the next few guys and have it be like, ah, well, the other guy wasn't good either. Nope.
Or if you miss on 1. But if you miss on 3,
yeah,
3 in succession.
That's really tough. I also think it's important to point out that saying they got out of the Blake Griffin deal
is the nicest possible way to say they had to buy out Blake Griffin because he was useless to their franchise. So, you know, that wasn't good management. That team has nothing on it. So it's the perfect place for someone like Cade Cunningham to go because there are no sacred cows on the Detroit roster, and everything they do from today forward should be about putting the best team possible around Cade Cunningham.
Is Jeremy Grant a Piston?
Yeah, but
that's it. So they got Cade Cunningham and Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, look, I mean, they got Corey Joseph, who's not a bad player. You know, Killian Hayes, their draft pick last year, showed some things down the stretch. It's just literally nobody, Jeremy Grant to Killian Hayes, matters a quarter as much as Cade Cunningham to the future. So that's kind of a nice place to be when you're getting that clear centerpiece prospect. Everything we do now is about him. We don't have to worry about these dudes on the roster in any meaningful way.
Money spends big in Detroit. He can have like an entire city block if he wants to pick that up. So
you better sell him on that.
Look, hey, all I can tell you, you don't have to sell a kid from Oklahoma on anything. You're from Oklahoma. You're lucky to be leaving.
They also have 37, 42, and 52.
Yep. And now, Sadiq Bey, like they did some good things with their draft last year. So there's some young talent here. I'm not saying the roster is utterly useless. I'm saying
no, the roster's useless, but they can make a new one.
That's right. That's the point.
The Rockets are going to be pairing their choice with Christian Wood. That'll be the foundation that they're going to go forward with. The Cavs, I don't know if the Cavs are going to get interesting really quicker than we thought here. It depends on what you think of Sexton Okoro and Jarrett Allen and who they end up going. You know, do you go another big to have a front court with Jarrett Allen? Are you looking for a wing? Are you looking for a guard to maybe do what either, you know, if you're not in love with how Sexton's begun his career? So the Cavaliers are going to get a little interesting here. And this is, it's going to be a good NBA draft.
Yeah, it is.
Instead of hearing about how, this isn't going to be a good draft at all. Why are we even covering it? That was the coverage on NBA TV. That's how much they were down on it last year. This is going to be a better draft for sure, and it should be an awful lot of fun.
But in fairness, they've been saying it about this draft in particular for three. People have been gearing up for this draft for 3 years.
Well, that's
and there is nothing that I've seen from anybody that changes that narrative at all. I mean, people are drooling about this thing well into the teens, which is very unusual to my memory.
Jay Billis even said he thinks it's one of the deeper drafts he's ever taken a look at. So it's going to be an awful lot of fun, and the whole point is you add the right talent and you get to do things in the playoffs that sound like this.
Crowder looking, throws it alley. Oh! Aiden puts it down! He puts it down! It's over!
And they're trying to say goaltending, but that's a live basketball. He can finish it.
Right, there is no goaltending on an inbound pass.
So he said it was over, Mike Breen did on ESPN, but it wasn't. They went to the monitor and looked at everything, still came back with the wrong decision. Thank God that it didn't affect the outcome of that game. Paul George didn't even get that shot off at the end after they put 0.7 on the clock instead of 0.3 on the clock. Whatever. Remember I told you a few weeks ago? I was like, whenever I look at Jay Crowder doing something in a playoff game, it's big. I don't know if Jay Crowder's ever done anything bigger in a playoff game than that pass to DeAndre Ayton. It was absolutely perfect. It was fantastic. And Ayton just... I mean, that was a wonderful play from the Devin Booker screen of Zubats, and it was just, that was perfectly executed.
Well, and mentioned by no one is the fact that DeAndre Ayton had a real veteran shove at Zubats to get clean.
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing you do when you know the referee is not looking at you. And that's a pro move. And however he learned it, and that made the play as much as anything.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, that's contested, and maybe he doesn't get a clean catch at it.
I think he learned it from being a professional for 3 years. And equally important in my mind is your broken-nosed superstar stepping in to screen off a big man to make that play happen. I mean, this team
gives me all the great strength and number warrior style vibes.
They got the look.
They play together. They play for each other. They're in the right places. They sacrifice. You know, the stars are sacrificing for the role players. It's everything you want in a championship team. I love this Suns team right now.
Head coach Monty Williams.
You know, credit to Jay. We were trying to get a lob for DA, and he had the awareness to just put it up there where DA could only get it. Book's such a great screen. Jay makes a great pass, and it's just one of those things that happens where you're just grateful for it.
DeAndre Ayton said he knew it was coming to him and that he had a matchup that he liked.
Once I set that first screen for Cam, I tried to set up Zubac to, you know, for Book to have a good angle on him. And I believe once my feet touch the paint where I can go off right, left, 1-2, not many people are going to be up there with me. So that's where I got confident at. Once I really got that gather and nobody bumped me or, you know, it was up. And, you know, that was it.
That was it. It was the perfectly, not only was the play drawn up perfect, it was executed perfect from every single guy who was involved with it. And Cameron Johnson said, Monty Williams got a big old bag of tricks like that. If you want to see more, you just stay tuned.
Coach got a big bag of tricks, a deep bag of tricks. And that was drawn up on the spot and then executed really well by our guys. But Coach got a deep bag of tricks, a lot of plays for a lot of different situations. He brought this one out. I don't think we've ever run it before. I don't think we've ever seen it before. Obviously, I don't think they had.
It's just, you know, when we put together the all-time Phoenix Suns highlight package, I doubt there will be a single highlight from this entire run, no matter where it ends, that'll be more of a textbook definition of a highlight than that bad boy. It was special. Welcome, everybody, to your 4 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.